I think the headline was Amazon ranks number one as most dog-friendly company in America.
Yeah, is that what
but,
it said?
Yeah, but 248th in people-friendly.
No, that's not what
that wasn't the headline was? Okay.
Come on.
No, I'm sorry.
Come on. Yes, but number one in customer-friendly.
Yes, they love their customers. They love their customers and their dogs.
Hey, welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
And I'm John Cook, GeekWire co-founder.
All right, John, there was a ton of news in the Seattle tech world this week, but none bigger than the fact that the Seattle tech scene and Seattle in general is now apparently officially Salesforce HQ2.
That's right. Tectonic shifts in the technology ecosystem here, with Salesforce agreeing to buy Tableau software, homegrown Tableau software, for $15
billion? 15.7. So if you're rounding, it's technically 16.
Wow.
All stock. Apparently Tableau wanted stock and not cash, which I guess speaks to its executives' belief in the long-term potential of Salesforce. But before we get there,
if you think there's a bubble in the economy right now, then maybe not the best bet. I would think maybe a hybrid deal would be a little bit better here.
Stock and cash.
Yeah.
Well, but let's take a step back. Tableau software, you've covered these folks pretty much since the beginning.
Since the beginning, yes. Right here in the center of the universe in the Fremont neighborhood of Seattle. That's where they were founded. I met with their founders, including their former CEO, Christian Chabot, a few months, I think it was, after they formed the company. And I remember meeting them in a small office just a bit east of our GeekWire HQ1 here in Fremont. And I've really tracked and followed the progress of the company from early startup stage to $15 billion exit.
One of the most interesting aspects of the Tableau story is the fact that they spun out of Stanford, essentially.
Yeah, a lot of people forget that. This was a company that the technology actually originated out of Stanford. And the fact that they ended up deciding to set up shop in Seattle goes against a lot of the trends back at that time.
Yeah, especially back at that time. This was long before we had this wave of engineering centers up here from the Silicon Valley tech giants. Seattle was sort of this place up in the corner where Microsoft was and this somewhat new, interesting company called Amazon.
Yeah, and the other interesting tidbit, if we're going back into the ancient history of Tableau, which since we both have covered them for a long time, we can do that. The fact of the matter is with Tableau, they raised very little venture capital. They only raised $15 million from NEA, and they never used the money.
Is that right?
Yes, very little. They basically bootstrapped and built it all on their own. The money really kind of came in, I think, just because they said, well, we got to have some institutional backing if we're going to go public and build this big company. But they really, which is a really testament to their entrepreneurial talent to build a company this big without much outside capital.
But what was interesting was Christian Chabot, who you mentioned earlier, the original CEO, co-founder, it wasn't like a business decision necessarily for him to put the company here. He and his wife liked Seattle. They had lived in the Bay Area and other places, and they decided, hey, let's move up there. And so that's what they did.
And he is a former venture capitalist too, which speaks to the interest here as well, that he didn't take much venture capital money to get the company off the ground.
He knows what the
strings
are.
Knows what the terms are, yes.
Exactly. So Tableau, for people who do not know the company, is involved in data visualization, and that's part of the larger business intelligence software and technology market. What that means is you take large amounts of data, you put it into a software program, and it spits out beautiful charts.
Beautiful vizzes.
Vizzes, not vizzies, as Mark Benioff called them on the conference
call. Or maybe that's the new name, because we just learned that tabloids is the name for Tableau employees, so maybe they are vizzies.
That's funny, yeah, because Adam Selipsky, the current CEO, when he put out the memo to employees and it was filed with the SEC, it addressed their employee base as tabloids, which I don't know if
it's not a real great, it's not a great connotation, so hey, oh well.
So, were you surprised by this announcement on Monday morning?
No.
Well, really?
I was surprised that happened on Monday. I mean, there's always an element of surprise. Now, you may recall, I don't know, it was a year or so ago that a memo leaked out from Salesforce. Did you know this?
Mm-hmm.
And it had some of their acquisition targets that they were looking at, and Tableau was one. I've thought for a while that Tableau is ripe for an acquisition. They brought in Adam Selipsky, the former AWS executive, who came in part to transition the company more to a cloud-based organization, a SaaS-based company, software as a service. And, because you remember, I mean, Tableau was started a number of years ago. They were a traditional software company selling licensed software, and that was their main business. And so that transition to the cloud has been really interesting with them. But in terms of my surprise, no, I wasn't, in part because that memo had leaked out before, in part because there was new leadership brought in. Sometimes that new leadership is brought in to position a company for a sale. They are at the forefront of a very interesting market with data and analytics. They probably had multiple bidders, which is my question for you. Have you been able to decipher whether Microsoft made a bid here?
Not yet.
Which would have been the natural acquirer.
Exactly. Microsoft is across the lake in Lake Washington. It has Power BI, its own similar service that also creates visualizations. And
you just have to think they were in the mix here.
And I got a chance to ask Adam Selipsky a bunch of different questions, including that one. He was not willing yet to talk about the way the negotiations played out. Apparently, there's going to be a regulatory filing coming down the road where they...
Which I was digging through some of those. I couldn't quite find...
Not yet.
...what they were... You've not found it either?
No, it's not in there yet.
Okay.
No. And just to be very specific about Tableau, Adam Selipsky came in and said, okay, we're selling traditional software licenses. He came in about 2016. And he said, okay, we're going to shift to subscriptions. The interesting thing about Tableau, and one of the reasons why the Salesforce acquisition of Tableau is really notable, is that Tableau actually offers still on-premises versions of its software. It offers it in the cloud, traditional servers, on-premises, data centers. And so that actually was one of the more interesting parts of the conference call, where Mark Benioff, who is Mr. No Software, Mr. Cloud.
Mr. SaaS.
Exactly. He talked about the value of offering that array of different options. So the main thing that Adam Selipsky has done is change the licensing model. In other words, you pay on a monthly or annual subscription versus a one-time software licensing fee. And what he explained to me was that not only is that just the way things are headed in the industry, but he likes it because you have to win your customers over and over and over again, and it makes you a better company for it. So that was interesting. But the thing that got the most headlines of all was the statement that I alluded to at the beginning. Let's hear Mark Benioff talk about Salesforce's new HQ2.
I'm just thrilled that we'll be able to help Tableau accelerate its mission to help people see and understand data. Those powerful seven words. There they are again. You know, Tableau will operate independently as part of Salesforce, led by Adam and his fantastic team. This combination will accelerate Salesforce's mission as well. Tableau will make both Customer 360 and Einstein stronger than ever and enable us to reach a much broader set of customers and users. I'm also excited to expand our presence in the Seattle area where Tableau is based. Did you know that Salesforce already has more than 1,000 employees in the Seattle and Bellevue area? And now we're looking forces to join with Tableau to expand our presence there. With Tableau, Seattle will become our second headquarters of Salesforce. It's going to be our HQ2, if you will.
All right, so that was Mark Benioff, Salesforce co-CEO and co-founder, on the conference call very early in the morning after this deal was announced on Monday. John, what do you make of that statement? Because I asked Adam Selipsky what that means. What does it mean to be HQ2?
Well,
what
did he say?
He said he didn't want to tell me.
He's so trained by Amazon. Well, it's like, don't answer any question, just avoid.
No. You answer questions. You just say, the answer to every question is, my number one priority is the customer.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
No, but in all seriousness, he actually, on this one, he said that he wasn't quite sure yet, and he wanted to let Salesforce speak for itself. But for you, what does it mean?
Well, it's part of this wave, which we've been tracking at GeekWire for years now, of the engineering centers from Silicon Valley that have discovered Seattle in a big, big way. And this trend is continuing. There are over 100 engineering centers that we've tracked on GeekWire that have set up shop here. And Salesforce sees this as a major talent hub that could rival San Francisco as a co-headquarters. And they're already growing here. Now they have 4,000 plus additional employees with Tableau, many of whom are based in the Seattle area. And my hunch, and I'm going to watch for this, is a potentially giant real estate move by Salesforce here.
Ooh, I've got a few ideas. No.
Which one did Amazon pull out of downtown?
Oh, the Rainier Square Tower? Yeah. Are they still in that one?
I don't.
The Rainier
Tower?
Well,
this is the one that's under construction.
This is where
Amazon pulled out and said, hey, we're not going to.
This is where my real estate knowledge is getting rusty. We need Matt Levy in here to tell us on
this. But anyway, it could be something as large as that. I mean, when you have Mark Benioff saying, this is our co-headquarters, that's a big deal. I mean, that's a massive company with huge ambitions. And if they are really going to plant their flag into Seattle in a much bigger way, I think we're going to see a lot of growth from them.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Wow. And that would make a statement to the community, too, which is another thing that...
Which they did in San Francisco with Salesforce Tower.
Absolutely.
And now the largest tower in San Francisco.
Right. And the other reason I like that theory is that at each of these towers, Salesforce has to have like an Ohana room on the top.
Ohana. Ohana. I love Ohana.
They've got all the Hawaiian things.
Yes.
But the whole idea is that it's open to employees during the day, and then at night it is leased out or actually given to nonprofits to use for free for their own events. And to me, that speaks to the fact that Mark Benioff has really taken a stand in a variety of different social issues over the past few years. He talked about that in an interview at an event this past week as well. He described himself almost as an accidental activist CEO because his employees really demanded it. And the generation of millennials in particular are looking for companies that come in and improve the world. Don't just make money, but improve the world. And that to me is one of the most interesting potential implications of his statement that Seattle is going to be Salesforce HQ2, not just the job growth, the company being based here, but the potential social impact of his involvement, if he does get involved, if that's what this means, in issues like housing affordability and homelessness and all these things that Seattle is grappling with at an earlier stage and on a smaller scale, but certainly on the same trajectory as San Francisco.
It's going to be very interesting to watch.
Yeah. So one of the moments that I got to ask Adam Slipsky about was something you alluded to earlier, and that was the Microsoft competition. So I asked him, well, let's hear what I asked him.
What does this acquisition by Salesforce do for you competitively? You've got Microsoft across the lake with Power BI. Is this going to be a standoff here across Lake Washington between Tableau / Salesforce
Pistols
and Microsoft?
Pistols of Dawn, long-range pistol. Well, first and foremost, you know, I personally have always believed in the power of being incredibly customer-focused, not particularly competitively focused. So I don't think you want to be naive or blind to what your competitors are doing, but I choose to focus 95% of my time on what we can do for customers, not on what competitors are doing. That being said, the capabilities, both the product side and sales and marketing that we can bring to market as part of Salesforce are really exciting, and I think are going to give us a lot of strength versus, you know, any other competitor in the market. And, you know, the ability to have the enterprise presence, the ability to, you know, have a broad array of technologies to look at and figure out which ones might work and be effective for customers inside the product. Those are absolutely going to strengthen us competitively, and I think, you know, we already have strong and consistent win rates against all competitors, and this should help to make sure that we're really competitive. But the reason we'll be competitive is because we'll have great solutions for customers, and that'll cause them to want to choose us.
I do think it's an interesting question on whether Microsoft was involved here and whether they made a bid for Tableau. But then just one last little tidbit. I love sharing these things. John, you and I were both, were you listening to the conference call too?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you texted me, and this is the backstory for all the lovers of journalism, like no, the inside scoop on this. You texted me at 4 a.m, right after this hit. And you said, whoa, Salesforce is buying Tableau. And I heard my phone buzz. And so I got on my phone. I said, wow, do you need any help with anything? And you never responded to the text because you called me like a minute later. I was I'm jumping up to help.
I'm trying to remember, where was the one, what was the story where something huge hit? Oh, it was Amazon HQ2.
I was in Portland.
You were in Portland at a hotel. And I remember the thing that you told me after that was, what worked was I called you twice. You knew that when the phone rang the second time,
that's
it woke
true.
You up. And
that
so that's
true.
Effectively what I was trying
okay,
to do.
Okay, that's a good tactic because it did work.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were up listening to the conference call at 5. By the way, the reason I was up was the cat started making noise. I was up. I looked at my phone and the notification was there from some service. I can't remember what it was, right on the lock screen. But anyway, up in the browser tab.
Oh, yeah. Yes. This was a good eye to spot this, that. I missed that.
There was, it said Project Tiburon. And I was like, Tiburon, California.
Now, this was the presentation that Salesforce put together to explain the deal to on the investor call.
Yes. So I asked Adam Selipsky about that, which led to one of the more entertaining moments of the interview that I had with him.
Why was this acquisition codenamed Project Tiburon? Is that right? In the investor call yesterday, if you looked up into the browser tab, the title was Project Tiburon.
Yeah.
I was Googling, like, does Mark Benioff live in Tiburon, California? Like, I was trying to figure out, like, was this where he made the text initially to get, I don't know. Anyway, it was that's, how's that for some observations?
That's sleuthing. I love attention detail. That's, good for you.
And then lastly, I noticed that Mark Benioff is obviously still learning a little bit about Tableau. During the call, he kept, as you said, calling them Vizzies. So I asked Adam Selipsky about that.
Can you clear up the pronunciation of the plural of the product of the of what Tableau creates? In other words, the visualizations that Tableau creates, you call them?
Vizzes?
Not Vizzies.
Correct.
So Mark, he's got a little bit of work to do on that.
Mark has done, in all honesty, an amazing job of understanding what we do as a company and how we talk about the company. He said, see and understand data a lot yesterday.
Yes, he did.
And I really appreciate it. And he's done a great job. So if we need to clean up anything around the edges, that'll be easy.
Yeah, that's minor in terms of integration issues.
Yeah.
All right. So
well, if you pay $15 billion for somebody, you can call it whatever you want, right?
Exactly. All right. So big picture, giant acquisition here. One of the debates that was happening when this news was breaking was, is this a good thing or a bad thing for the Seattle tech community? On the one hand, you've got a giant headquarters of a publicly traded company, 4,000 employees, half of them here in the Seattle region, basically shifting to San Francisco in a lot of ways. That's the way you would look. Some people would look at that. You're losing a headquarters. You could also look at it another way. So what are your thoughts?
I don't buy into that. I look at what's happening in the tech economy right now, especially on the West Coast, and especially the connections between Seattle and the Bay Area. And it's becoming, as I've said, this giant West Coast megalopolis, largely driven by the tech industry. And the fact that Salesforce is buying Tableau and setting up an anchor here is actually not it's not that earth-shattering. I mean, I think that it's an old way of looking at it in terms of we lost a headquarters, like Boeing moves out of the city of Seattle,
right,
and all those headquarters jobs go with them. It's like, I don't presume that's what's going to happen here. In fact, if you take Salesforce and Mark Benioff at his word, they're going to double down here in a much bigger way. So the potential impact is that it only exacerbates the issues related to housing, transportation, and what have you in the Seattle area.
All right. Well, that was a big story this week. I've spent a lot of time digging into it, had a lot of fun chasing this story, looking at browser tabs. And I'm checking those SEC filings.
One just moved.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, you're listening to the GeekWire podcast, and we'll be right back.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
All right, welcome back. We will report on the details of that SEC filing if they prove to be consequential on GeekWire. You can check that out. John, two startup stories stood out to me this week. One from Steve Murch.
That was an interesting story. Yeah,
I enjoyed it too. Yeah. This was a story by Monica Nicholsberg. Steve Murch, explain who he is.
A longtime Seattle area entrepreneur. He sold the company VacationSpot.com to Expedia back in the day, and then went on to found a company by the name of Big Oven, which was a online and app-based recipe finder, which he also sold. So he'd been a very successful entrepreneur and a very civically engaged entrepreneur, which speaks to his latest project.
That's right. His new project is called Align Vote, A-L-I-G-N-V-O-T-E. So like you're aligning something. And the whole idea is that you're actually seeing how closely your viewpoints on issues align with candidates that you could potentially vote for. And what you do is you fill out the same questionnaire that the candidates fill out, and then Steve's algorithms compare them and say, hey, based on the words you're using and the words that the candidates are using, these are the candidates who seem to most closely match your beliefs.
And he's doing this with the City Council of Seattle right now. But
right.
Gosh, we really need this right now in the Democratic field for
20
president.
Of them? 21,
yes,
however many?
Yeah.
Depends on whether Jay Inslee is going to make it into the debate
or not.
He
could actually get a lot of attention if he got those candidates to fill out this.
Oh.
Survey.
I'm sure he's probably on it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to note that one. I thought it was a really interesting story.
I actually want to try it because I am completely lost when it comes to the city council race in Seattle.
And this is a problem that computer science should solve, really, in a lot of ways. This makes total sense. As soon as I started reading the story, I was like, oh, that's what he's doing? Perfect. That makes
sense. Yeah, as soon as I started reading, I was like, I want to do this. I want to try this. So, cool idea.
And then the other startup story that I actually got to write this past week was about a new company called Glow that has spun out of Pioneer Square Labs, which is a startup studio here in Seattle. It is co-founded by Amira Valiani, and she was in the Obama administration as a communications and strategy executive. Met Ben Gilbert, one of the co-founders of Pioneer Square Labs, big podcaster, at a conference, and they started talking about all sorts of podcast stuff. They have created a platform that allows podcasts to easily set up membership programs where they provide exclusive content, perks, and it's just super streamlined and simple. This is the same program that was used in beta by the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast to provide its ad-free version. Great podcast if you don't listen to it, by the way. And also by Acquired, Ben Gilbert's podcast with David Rosenthal. They used this as well. It was known as Kimberlite at the time, but now it's launched in public beta as Glow. Here's my question out there to all the GeekWire podcast listeners. We've been thinking about using this platform. Would you pay a modest monthly subscription for bonus content from GeekWire? Let us know.
Just imagine what I need to hold back in order to provide the bonus content.
Yeah,
you know, what is that? You know, we can come up with some good stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah. So let us know. Send an email to Todd at geekwire.com with the subject line subscriptions. Is that bad?
Yeah. You'll treat that as spam.
Yeah. Well, what's your description? I'm in.
Yeah. Sure.
One of those two.
Just send us an email.
Send us an email and let us know what you think. All right. We've got one last quick random channel coming up. You're listening to GeekWire, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. It's time for the random channel, that moment of the week when we talk about all the random items we were buzzing about behind the scenes at GeekWire this week. John, this was not in the random channel, technically, but
it was actually on GeekWire.
It was on GeekWire. Amazon ranks number one as most dog-friendly company in America. Trupanion, the pet insurance company, is number three.
The headline was Amazon ranks number one as most dog-friendly company in America.
Yeah, is that what
but,
it said?
Yeah, but 248th in people friendly?
No, that's not what
that
headline.
Wasn't the headline was? Okay.
Come on.
No, I'm sorry.
Come on. Yes, but number one in customer friendly, John.
Yes, they love their customers. They love their customers and their dogs.
This was an inaugural list from Rover, the dog sitting service based here in Seattle, and they ranked the top 100 workplaces across the U.S. What was interesting to me about this was there's actually some controversy about this whole topic.
Anytime you create a list, there's going to be controversy.
Well, not only that, John, but in the tech industry, there's a question of whether having pets in the office is actually appropriate. There's sort of a backlash, a groundswell of negativity on this.
No, don't tell that to Hugo. Hugo's in the next door office.
That's why
he's
I brought
such
it
a
up.
Joy.
So this
not
is
for you.
Hugo's okay. I like Hugo.
You don't like dogs.
I'm not a big dog person.
You don't like dogs.
And as I mentioned earlier, the cat really was one of the best assets of the week by waking me up.
Doesn't it
at
make
4
you
o'clock.
When you're stressed out? Doesn't it just make you feel calmer when
no.
you have the opportunity to pet a dog and
when
have
you've
a
got
dog
this
laying
frantic
around?
Thing running
it's
around
frantic.
At your feet, going for your food.
Well, he will go for the food. I just left the office, and I ran over to Kara Coleman's office because I had to troubleshoot something with her, and I forgot I left a component of my evergreen salad on the table. And guess what happened when I came
oh,
back?
Oh my God!
Yep. He got in there. He got in there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Anyway, I do like having a dog around the office.
Yeah.
And many of our employees and workers do too, Todd. So
I understand.
Keep that in mind.
I understand. All right. So other companies that made the list in Seattle include Ookla, RealSelf, Possible, Carrot, Fly Homes, Avo, Outreach, and Tune. So if you got a pup, now you know where you probably want to apply for a job. We'll link to all of these stories from the show notes. John, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm John Cook.
Thanks for listening to GeekWire.